Now where are we? Connor asked and looked around. The twins were standing in a large, circular room with tall windows. There were violet drapes and a lavender rug. A balcony wrapped around the entire room outside. Only two pieces of furniture were in the room. An enormous bed and a spinning wheel made from dark wood.
Connor, Alex said softly. I think we're in Sleeping Beauty's room. The room she slept in for 100 years.
Connor walked over to the bed. There was a beautiful engraving on the headboard that said,
For 100 years she slept. The hearts of her people she kept. So they awaited with patience for the bliss of true love and true love's first kiss.
Alex went to the spinning wheel, but the spindle was gone.
The spindle isn't here, Alex said. I don't understand. The man who wrote the journal promised Sleeping Beauty he would return it after he used it.
Is it not here? Or did he just not return it because the spell didn't work? Connor asked.
The lock on the black door began to rattle as someone from the other side unlocked it.
Hide!
Alex whispered. She and her brother dove underneath the bed. The black door swung open. The twins expected to see the clunky boots of the guards, but instead they saw a pair of pink heels.
Is that?
Alex whispered.
Is that what? Ouch!
Connor hit his head hard on the bottom of the bed.
You can come out from there, Sleeping Beauty said. The twins couldn't tell if it was a trap. I've called off the gods, Sleeping Beauty added. No one's going to hurt you.
The twins slowly crawled out from under the bed.
We didn't steal the slipper, Alex said. It's hard to explain, but I promise we're not thieves.
Sleeping Beauty nodded. I believe you.
You do?
Connor asked. He was stunned.
Because if I were you, I would totally think we were thieves.
Sleeping Beauty smiled at them and took a seat on the bed.
So, you two are after the wishing spell.
The twins nodded self-consciously.
It's a really long story, Connor said.
I'm sure, Sleeping Beauty said. And you've come to ask me permission to borrow the spindle from my spinning wheel, haven't you?
The twins guiltily nodded. Sleeping Beauty laughed to herself.
You know, not too long ago, a man came to my castle and asked me to borrow it, she said. At first, I was completely against the idea, but he convinced me.
How'd he manage that? Alex asked.
He told me all about the wishing spell, and how he had traveled to another world, fallen in love, and was desperate to return. And being somewhat romantic myself, I let him humor me with the story, she said,
and her smile faded back into the contemplative expression they had first seen.
And then he started describing this world to me, a place of machines and technology, a place of enormous structures and lands and people unlike any I'd ever seen. And I believed him.
Why?
Alex asked.
Because I had dreamed about this place, Sleeping Beauty said. It's complicated, and even I don't understand it. But while I was under that horrible spell, I dreamed about the place he was describing. I dreamed about so many things. I had just assumed it had come from my imagination. I never mentioned a word of it to anyone. So I knew he had to be telling the truth.
Did he ever return it?
Alex asked, desperate to know.
Did the spell work for him?
Sleeping Beauty studied the twins' faces.
You're from there, aren't you? She asked. And you're trying to find a way home.
Alex and Connor didn't have to respond. She already knew it was true. She reached under one of the pillows on the bed and withdrew a metal spindle. The twins felt their spirits soar. There it was. The man had returned it. The spell must have worked for him.
All I'm going to ask in return is that you also return it when you're done, Sleeping Beauty said, and handed it to Alex. As I'm sure you can imagine, it has sentimental value for me.
The twins were beaming. Now they knew getting home was a possibility, and they weren't trapped in the land of stories forever.
We're just a couple of strangers, Alex said. Why are you being so kind to us? There are many things that are out of my control, Sleeping Beauty said,
and her smile faded again.
So I like to help as much as I can, when I can.
She stood and walked outside onto the balcony. The twins followed her. Although the kingdom wasn't in the best condition, the view was spectacular. Alex and Connor could see the entire kingdom and parts of others. The ocean sparkled in the distance, and a beautiful waterfall could be seen in the mountains nearby. It was so beautiful, they forgot how high up they were.
This used to be the most beautiful of all the kingdoms, Sleeping Beauty said. The rolling green hills, the wildflowers, the rivers that used to flow, they're all just memories now. Even the natural beauty of the land was put to rest under that awful curse.
Will things ever get better? Alex asked.
I certainly hope so, Sleeping Beauty said.
Can I tell you a secret?
She asked the twins, receiving eager nods.
I haven't slept since Chase awoke me with the kiss.
The twins were shocked. Yikes, Connor said. You must be exhausted.
After sleeping for a century, I'll be quite rested for a while, Sleeping Beauty said. I promised myself, and I promised this kingdom, that I wouldn't rest until it was restored to its original state. Had my parents just let me die, as the curse originally intended, none of this would have ever happened. So I'm prepared to spend the rest of my life, the life they ensured, making things right again.
Alex and Connor felt sorry for the young queen. They'd always been so distracted by the thought of a cursed, sleeping kingdom that they'd never thought about the responsibility a monarch would face putting it back on its feet.
I suppose that's why the wishing spell has always intrigued me, Sleeping Beauty said. It's proof that if someone wants something enough, and they're willing to work for it, they can achieve great things. I keep the spindle as a reminder that even the worst curses cast by the most powerful enchantresses can eventually be overcome.
The kingdom's very lucky to have a queen like you, Alex said. A weaker person would have given up. Try the rubber band trick, Connor told her. I promise you won't regret it.
I will, Sleeping Beauty smiled. It's probably time you headed out. I may believe you, but convincing my husband and the royal advisor of your innocence won't be easy. Follow me. I know a secret way out of the castle.
The twins left the castle, feeling inspired by Sleeping Beauty. The fairy tale had always romanticized the bravery of the young prince and the horror of the curse that had been cast upon the land. But it had failed to mention what a strong and brave woman the Sleeping Beauty truly was. Chapter 15. The Northern Kingdom. Alex and Connor traveled into the Northern Kingdom by boat, a first for the twins. They found a fisherman just about to travel up the river into the kingdom and persuaded him to let them come aboard. Alex said they were lost and pretended to cry. She was very convincing, too. Connor, however, was not. He tried to join in on the performance, and things just became awkward. Thankfully, the fisherman allowed them to travel with him anyway. The boat was small and flat, and had just enough room for the three of them. It traveled perfectly along with the river's current, so they didn't even need to row. The twins were enjoying the ride, and were able to appreciate the scenery, pointing out every riverside village they saw. It was nice to travel without fear of a wolf or an ogre running up from behind them. The Northern Kingdom was very misty and cool. The twins could tell it was the type of place that would become freezing in the winter. The kingdom was covered with grassy fields and several bodies of water. An icy, steep mountain range bordered the north. The boat traveled along the river and poured into Swan Lake, which was appropriately inhabited by many swans and other birds. Snow White's palace sat on the edge of Swan Lake. It was short but wide, with tan marble walls, dark green domes, and several colorful stained glass windows, including an especially large one shaped as a bright red apple. "What's up with all the apple tributes?" Connor asked. "Didn't the apple almost kill Snow White? Why does she have it displayed every chance she gets?"
"I suppose it's symbolic for the kingdom, like a cross in a church," Alex said, giving her best educated guess.
There were no towns or villages near the palace. It had been built away from everything else and was an isolated world of its own. It seemed like such a lonely place. Alex had spent some time with her nose in the journal, rereading everything she could in case she'd missed something. She put it away and began searching the shore until she finally spotted what she was looking for.
"Excuse me, sir," Alex said to the fisherman. "Can you please drop us off at that riverbank?"
The fisherman steered the boat in that direction, and the twins got off and said goodbye to him.
"Why are we getting off here?" Connor asked. "The palace is that way."
"Connor, I'm tired of explaining everything to you. Here," she said, and handed him the journal.
He read the pages that she had been looking over during their trip on the boat.
"Snow White's palace overlooks Swan Lake, and part of the lake flows into the moat circling the palace, which works to the advantage of anyone trying to sneak into the palace unnoticed. There is a hidden gate at the bottom of the palace that the moat runs through. It's right by the dungeon and is used to transport prisoners into and out of the palace by boat. It's easy to swim under the gate and then climb up onto the dock inside. The glass coffin is in a large storage room that used to be the Evil Queen's private chamber on the third floor. On the second floor, you'll find a large portrait of the Evil Queen herself, just past the grand staircase off the main entrance. The portrait is actually a secret door that leads up to the chamber. Travel at night, so it's difficult for anyone to spot you in the water. But note that the Swan Lake waters are very deep and can be rough after sundown. Use something as a flotation device, like a log or a piece of wood.
Alex was standing next to a log that had washed ashore on the riverbed, and she gestured down to it.
See? Alex said.
Gotcha, Connor said.
The twins waited for nightfall to travel across the river to the palace. They carefully placed the log into the river and then entered the water themselves. It was unbearably cold. Connor made a high-pitched gasping sound as soon as he was waist-deep.
Woo! It's so cold! I think we may be twin sisters now, he said through rattling teeth.
I don't think I've ever been this cold in my entire life.
Just keep thinking that we only have two more items left to collect and then we'll be home, Alex said, shivering herself.
Jewels from Snow White's coffin and the saber from the deepest sea, Connor repeated to himself. Jewels from Snow White's coffin and the saber from the deepest sea. Nope, I'm still cold.
They held onto the log and drifted on the current to the palace. Having the log was a good call, since the water was very choppy, and the twins were getting tired just by holding onto it. They probably would have drowned without it. The closer they got to the palace, the more soldiers they saw marching the grounds.
There are so many soldiers, Connor said through shivering teeth. It's because of the Evil Queen, Alex said. I doubt there was this much surveillance when the man from the journal came.
The twins submerged themselves completely whenever they thought a soldier might be able to see them. They steered the log into the palace's moat, careful not to make a splash or cause too many ripples. They had to circle the palace twice, but eventually they found the secret gate. They let go of the log and swam under the gate. It was a much deeper dive than they had thought. Connor came to the surface on the other side and was gasping for air. He treaded water for a moment, waiting for his sister to surface, but she didn't.
Alex? Connor asked, looking for her in the water around him. Alex!
Connor dove back underwater. He found Alex, struggling under the gate. One of the straps on her back had caught when she swam under it. She was stuck, and she desperately needed air. Connor swam down to her and yanked on her back as hard as he could to set his sister free, but it wouldn't budge. He tugged harder, and the strap finally ripped off. He helped Alex get to the surface. She was breathing harder than he had ever heard her breathe before. She had been seconds away from drowning. Connor helped her over to the dock, and they both climbed on top of it. They were both so alarmed that they had forgotten how cold they were.
Thank you, Alex said once she had caught her breath. That was really brave of you.
I didn't have a choice, Connor said. You had all the wishing spell items in your bag.
Alex playfully hit him, and they quietly laughed. They were drenched, and their jaws were chattering so hard that the sound of it echoed around them. The only way out was through a stone doorway. The twins peered inside it and saw a long hallway. At one end was a spiral staircase leading down to the dungeon, they assumed, and at the other was a spiral staircase leading up. They chose the staircase leading up. It led straight to another hall with a steamy odor in the air. It was very humid inside this part of the palace, and the twins soon walked by an open door and saw why.
Look, it's the laundry room, Alex said.
The room was full of large, steaming tubs of water, and several garments and sheets were hung up to dry around the room. It was past working hours, so the room was empty.
I have an idea, Alex said, and darted inside the room.
What are you doing? Connor asked her.
She started digging through a pile of what Connor hoped were clean clothes and linens.
If the grounds outside are any indication, I bet the halls of the palace are swarming with soldiers, she said.
And? Connor said.
We're going to seem very suspicious walking around soaked to the bone in our t-shirts and jeans, she explained.
She pulled out two dresses and two lacy caps from the basket.
No way, Connor said, realizing what she intended to do with them. Absolutely not.
Connor, put your pride aside and get dressed. We've come way too far to get caught now, she said, pulling one of the dresses over her head.
The guys at school can never know about this, Connor said, with a very serious face.
If your friends find out you traveled into the fairy tale world, I doubt this would be what they were most interested in hearing about, Alex said.
The twins got dressed and looked almost identical in the same outfit. They wrapped their wet clothes in bags and towels and then carried the towels to look busy. They journeyed higher into the palace, perfectly disguised as two maids working a night shift. The palace had beautiful marble floors and walls on the inside as well.
The stained glass windows were even more beautiful with moonlight shining through them.
Alex was right. Every hall and corridor was under constant watch by soldiers.
Connor was too embarrassed to look any of them in the eye. He did find a few gold coins in the pocket of his maid's uniform, however, which made him feel better.
Alex and Connor found the grand staircase in the middle of the palace. They climbed it to the second floor and began scanning the halls for a portrait of the evil queen. Like Cinderella's palace, there were portraits of past rulers framed on the walls, and statues of all seven of the dwarfs that had helped Snow White.
"How do we know what the evil queen looks like?" Connor asked. "We've never seen her before."
"We'll just have to guess," Alex said.
They walked past a portrait of a woman sitting in a garden. All the plants and flowers were bright around her, but she wore a long, dark gown. The woman was beautiful, but she had a blank, cold expression on her face.
"That's her," Alex said.
There was something about the woman's eyes in the portrait that made Alex sure of it. They were beautiful, but they seemed so empty, as if all the happiness had been drained out of her soul.
Alex waited for two soldiers to leave the hall and then tried pulling on the portrait. It was stuck. She pulled harder, and still it didn't budge.
"Are you sure that's it?" Connor said.
100%, Alex said.
She gave it another good tug, and the portrait swung away from the wall like an open door. Behind the portrait was a wooden ladder that went up to the third floor.
"Nice one," Connor said, and gave his sister a high five.
The twins climbed up the ladder and found the back of another secret door. The twins entered the storage chamber from behind an exact replica of the portrait they had just gone through on the second floor. The whole room was filled with old furniture covered in white sheets and old trunks and chests. The portrait the twins had climbed through was the only painting hung on the walls. The rest were stacked in piles against the walls around the room. The room was long and had a set of heavy double doors at one end and a raised platform with a curtain around it at the other. The twins knew without a doubt that this place was where the evil queen had kept her magic mirrors. There was a large counter with tubes, vials, and glass containers. They had all been emptied out, but the twins knew it must have been where the evil queen had kept her poisons.
"This room gives me the creeps," Connor said. "It looks like no one has been here for years."
"I don't see the glass coffin anywhere," Alex said.
She started uncovering the furniture, trying to find it, but it wasn't in the room.
"The coffin isn't here," she said, feeling a rush of panic come over her. "Let's just look around."
"Look around for what?" Connor asked.
"For anything," yelled Alex, frustrated and upset. "Try and find anything that says where the glass coffin may have been taken."
The twins searched the room from top to bottom. They looked through all the trunks and cases, but found nothing that gave any sign of where it might be. There were so many years of memories packed away in this room. It was impossible to tell what had belonged to the evil queen, or to Snow White, or to the rulers before them. Alex was going through a stack of parchments. She found interesting handwritten letters among them that she couldn't help but read. The first letter had masculine handwriting, and said,
"Dear Evely, I love you more than a bird loves the morning sun. Every second I'm away from you is a moment wasted. I am yours forever. Mira."
The next was written by a woman, and said,
"Dearest Mira, you are the last thing I think about before I sleep, and the first thing I think about when I wake. And the time in between is filled with a longing to be in your arms. My heart is yours, and yours alone. Evely."
The letters between the two lovers continued. The handwriting on the next letter seemed rushed.
"Evely, it is the cruelest punishment possible to be kept from you. Not being able to touch your skin or kiss your lips has made my soul hurt. I am hollow without you. I will save you from this wickedness. I swear it. Mira."
Alex could see tiny circles on the paper. Teardrops, she figured. The letters were wrinkled from having been held so tight.
"Mira, the thought of being with you again is what keeps my heart beating. Every day is a day spent searching for a way to be with you. I live for you. I love you with every breath I take. Evely."
They were short, but so passionate. Alex felt her own heart beating faster after reading them. She looked for more, but found none.
"Alex," Connor said, "come take a look at this."
He was going through the painting stacked against the wall and had found one that made his heart drop. Connor pulled a large portrait out from the stack. It was of a tall, grizzled man with a bushy, brown beard. He wore a large coat and held a crossbow.
"That must be the evil queen's huntsman," Alex said.
"I bet," Connor said.
but look closer.
Alex took a second look and saw that partially hidden behind the huntsman in the portrait was a little girl. She had bright green eyes and hair that was so dark red it seemed purple.
It can't be, Alex said.
The twins felt sick to their stomachs. It was the woman they had seen in Red Riding Hood's castle. Her features and hair color were too distinctive for it not to be.
So, is she the huntsman's daughter?
Connor asked.
She must be, Alex said.
I didn't even know he had a daughter, Connor said.
What does she want with the wishing spell?
Alex thought about it. She barely knew anything about the huntsman. She knew nothing about his daughter. While the wheels spun in her head, coming up with different possibilities, a horrifying thought came to her.
What if she's not collecting for herself? What if she's collecting for the evil queen?
Alex said. Connor's face went white, and he shook his head.
No, he said. What would she want with the wishing spell?
It makes sense, Alex said. She couldn't deny the facts. She escaped from prison for a reason. She has something unfinished. Maybe revenge or something bigger. Something she can't complete herself.
What if she needs it for the same reason we do? Connor asked.
What if she's trying to get into our world?
The idea hadn't occurred to Alex. She looked back at the portrait of the evil queen on the wall. She stared at the painted face and tried to find the answers in her lifeless eyes.
What could she be planning?
The twins heard a set of footsteps outside the chamber. The door was unlocked from the outside, and someone started to open it.
Quick, hide! Connor said.
He and Alex jumped inside one of the bigger trunks and shut the lid, leaving it open just a crack so they could still see the room.
Your Majesty,
said a booming man's voice from farther down the hall, and whoever was opening the door stopped.
Yes, what is it? Said a woman's voice just behind the door.
My men and I have returned,
the man said.
We've searched everywhere, and there's still no sign of your stepmother.
The twins recognized his voice. It was Sir Grant, the soldier who had made the announcement about the evil queen and the Charming Kingdom during the ball.
Oh, said the woman.
Your Highness, forgive me for asking again, but you were the last person to see her in the palace before she escaped. Are you sure there isn't anything you can tell us about that night? Any detail or clue, or something she said that would give us an idea of where she was going?
Sir Grant asked.
I've told you countless times. I don't remember anything of the sort, the woman said. I went to simply say a few things that had been on my mind, and once I had done so, I left.
Your Highness, it's only a matter of time before she strikes. Before she poisons a river and kills half a kingdom, or something worse,
Grant said.
You knew her better than anyone else. For your own safety, please inform us immediately if you remember anything else.
You will be the first I inform if any memories surface, the woman said. Now if you'll excuse me, I'd like to be alone.
Sir Grant returned down the hall. The woman slowly turned the handle of the chamber door and opened it. She was a beautiful woman with the darkest hair and the lightest skin the twins had ever seen.
It's Snow White,
Alex whispered to Connor and squeezed his arm. She wore a white nightgown and a matching overcoat. She stood in the doorway for a moment, just looking at the room before she entered it. It seemed hard for her to be in the room where so many attempts on her life had once been planned. The way she surveyed everything around her made the twins assume she hadn't been inside this room in a very long time. Snow White entered the room and locked the door behind her. She walked around the room and carefully went through all the things just as the twins had done. She went to a stack of old books. She went through the pages of one that was black and had a large skull on its cover. Snow White flipped through its pages until she let out a tiny gasp and dropped the book. The twins could see from the open book lying on the ground that she had discovered the page with the recipe for a poisoned apple. She took a seat on the platform behind her and began crying, burying her face into her hands. The whole situation seemed to have taken a toll on the young queen.
We should ask her where the coffin is, Alex whispered to Connor.
Are you sure? She seems like she needs a moment, Connor said.
Unfortunately, we don't have a moment to spare, Alex said.
Alex slowly stood in the trunk and pushed open the lid.
Your Majesty, she said softly.
Snow White gasped. She was startled and embarrassed to see she wasn't alone.
Who are you? She asked. How did you get in here?
Boy, if we got a nickel every time someone asked us that, we could afford our own palace to sneak into, said Connor, standing up beside his sister.
We don't mean any harm, Miss White. We just need to ask you a question, and then we'll be gone,
Alex said.
First, tell me how you got in here,
Snow White said. The portrait, Connor said. There's a secret ladder that leads down to the second floor.
Connor, don't give away all our secrets, Alex said.
I know that, Snow White said. I used it when I would sneak into this room as a girl. How did you know about it?
We read about it somewhere, Connor said, waving his hands like the subject wasn't a big deal.
You seem like nice children, but you shouldn't be sneaking into places where you don't belong, Snow White said. These are very dangerous times we're living in.
Tell me about it, Connor said with a snort.
We completely agree and promise never to do it again, Alex said. We were just wondering where your glass coffin might be.
Snow White looked at them uneasily. It was such a bizarre question.
It was moved, she said.
To where?
Connor asked.
I gave it back to the dwarfs, Snow White said. It was beautiful, but as you can imagine, it was strange to have that coffin in the palace. They keep it somewhere in their minds.
The twins sighed at the news. The road ahead of them had just become much longer.
What on earth would you two want with my coffin?
Snow White asked. They looked at each other, not sure what to tell her and what not to tell her.
We're on a bit of a scavenger hunt, Alex said. And we're in a bit of a time crunch, you see, because your stepmother may be after the same things we are.
Snow White looked at them very seriously.
Children, my stepmother is a very dangerous woman. If she's after something and you are in her way, she won't hesitate to kill you. She is heartless. If there is any possibility of you crossing paths with her, you must stop whatever you're doing immediately.
A loud banging came from the door.
Your Majesty, are you in here?
A soldier asked.
The king couldn't find you and is concerned.
Yes, one moment, please,
Snow White said, and then turned to the twins.
You two should go.
The twins nodded and climbed up to the portrait.
Promise you'll think about what I've said,
Snow White said to them, just before they shut the portrait door.
Of course,
Alex lied. Snow White smiled with relief and left the chamber. The twins decided to exit the palace through the main entrance, since they were still disguised as servants.
The dwarf mines are in the dwarf forests, which aren't very far from here, Alex said, looking down at the map. Remember, Snow White ran there by foot after the huntsman failed to kill her.
We're going back into the dwarf forests, Connor said. Do we have a death wish?
We don't have a choice, Alex said.
The twins camped out in a safe patch of woods near Snow White's palace and slept for the little night remaining. They hung their wet clothes over a tree branch to dry by the next morning. They began the return to the dwarf forest. Alex's bag had only one strap now, but it worked nonetheless. They walked for a good while before they found a driver willing to give them a ride.
Are you sure you want to go in there? It's a very dangerous place, the driver said.
Trust us. We know, Connor said.
He gave the driver the coins he had found in his maid's dress the night before to further persuade him. The cart traveled down the path, past the ugly duckling pond, which Alex found incredibly amusing, and into a forest that had been logged. For miles around, there were nothing but tree stumps. It didn't make the twins sad to see all the missing trees. They had seen enough live ones recently to make up the difference.
I really hope we don't run into the evil queen, Connor said during the trip. That would just suck.
I just hope she doesn't already have the saber from the deepest sea, Alex said. Otherwise, we may have to cross paths.
I wonder if she knows about us, Connor said. If she sent the huntsman's daughter to find Sleeping Beauty's spindle and the troll and goblin king's crown, and they both were gone, she would realize sooner or later that someone else is collecting objects for the spell.
I hope she doesn't, Alex said, and then let out a sigh. It seems like the longer we're here, the worse it gets for us. Something always comes up that makes things more difficult.
Alex's face went pale, and her mouth dropped open. She looked as if she had just seen a ghost.
What's wrong? Connor asked. You look like you got a B on a pop quiz.
He turned and looked in the direction of her gaze. In the distance, standing in the middle of the field of stumps, was a tree that, instead of growing straight out of the ground, was curved and wound in circles like a large vine. It was unmistakably the curvy tree, the one their father had told them stories about seeing when he was a kid.
You're right, Alex, Connor said. Things always find a way of becoming more complex.
Chapter 16. Through the Mines. The twins didn't speak for the rest of the trip into the dwarf forests. They couldn't. There was too much to say and not enough words to express what they were feeling. The driver dropped him off a mile or so away from the mines, and the twins walked in silence the rest of the way. They weren't even alarmed or threatened by the forest around them. Their minds were so full, there was no room to become nervous or timid by the thick and chilling trees around them.
"The mines are just past this hill," Alex said, looking at the map.
At least now they were speaking, just not about the subject they needed to address. The twins reached the top of the hill, and on the other side below were several tunnels leading into the side of a mountain. They were much different from the tunnels they'd seen in the troll and goblin territory. They were perfectly rounded and sturdy. Dozens of dwarves were working in them, transporting wagons of jewels and rocks from one tunnel into the next. A loud bell rang from somewhere inside the mines, and a dozen more dwarves emerged, carrying their lanterns and picks with them. It was the end of the day, and they all headed home in single-file lines to different parts of the forest. The twins waited on the hill for a few moments before going into the mines, making sure no one was lingering behind. They went through the largest of the tunnels and found a row of lanterns hung low on the dirt wall just inside. They each took a lantern and walked deeper into the mountainside. The mines were huge. The shovels were lined up against the walls, and the floor was covered with tracks of the dwarfs' mining carts and stretched into the mountain for miles. The twins kept walking and walking with their lanterns raised high above them, being on careful lookout for anything that might resemble a glass coffin.
"Are we going to talk about this?" Alex asked her brother as they searched.
"Talk about the mines?" he asked.
"No, you know what I mean," Alex said.
"I don't want to talk about anything but finding the coffin," Connor said.
"Connor, ignoring the situation isn't going to help anything," Alex said.
"Ignoring what situation?" he said, not looking her in the eye. "We saw the curvy tree. It was just another story Dad heard and told us when we were younger. Don't make this a bigger deal than it is."
"That's not what this is, and you know it," Alex said, raising her voice.
"Alex, stop," Connor said.
"Stop denying it," she said.
"Alex, don't," he said.
"You've known since the minute we got here. You felt it too," Alex said. "I know you did. You may be able to lie to yourself, but you can't lie to me."
"I'm not lying. You're making things up in your head that you want to be true," Connor said, trying to hide the tears forming in his eyes.
"All my life, I felt like I was missing out on something. Like somewhere in the world, there was something going on that I was supposed to be a part of. And now we found it. It's this place. Part of us belongs here," she said, with tears streaming down her face.
"You can't prove it," Connor said.
"Connor, face it," Alex yelled. "Dad is from here. He's from the land of stories."
"Then why didn't he tell us?"
Connor shouted, and it echoed through the mines.
"Why did he keep it from us?"
He sat on the ground and quietly sobbed into his hands. Alex sat on the ground next to her brother and cried with him. It was so much to take on, so much to digest.
"Maybe he felt like he couldn't," Alex said. "He always said he would take us to the places where he grew up when we were older. We're still pretty young. Maybe he thought he would tell us when he thought we were old enough to understand."
"I think, 'Hi, kids, did I ever tell you I'm from another dimension?' is pretty shocking no matter what age you are," Connor said.
"It's such a heavy thing to confess," Alex said. "He must have been waiting for the right moment. Unfortunately, the right moment didn't come until it was too late."
"So does that mean Grandma's from here too?" Connor asked.
"I'm guessing so," Alex said.
"Then how did they get into our world? There must be more than one way besides the wishing spell," Connor said.
"There must be," Alex said. "But the wishing spell is all we've got so far, so we need to keep looking for the glass coffin if we ever want to see Mom again."
The twins dried their tears and continued their search into the mines.
"You don't think Mom is from here too, do you?"
Connor asked.
"I doubt it," Alex said.
"She has photo albums of her childhood. Dad only had stories."
"Do you think she knows?" Connor asked.
"She has to," Alex said. "How could she not? They are married for more than a decade."
"Then maybe she knows where we are," Connor suggested. "Maybe she isn't as worried about us as we thought."
The twins spent another hour just walking through the mines. Connor had seen so many tunnels that he felt like his mind was starting to play tricks on him. He could have sworn he kept seeing things running around in the shadows.
"Did you see that?" he asked, paranoid.
"You're just seeing shadows," Alex said.
"Oh," Connor said. "I could have sworn it was... never mind."
The twins found a long, miniature table with a few dozen miniature chairs around it. It looked like an area where the dwarves took breaks from working. A large portrait of Snow White hung on the dirt wall behind it, and a glass coffin with rubies and diamonds sat against the wall underneath it.
"Bingo," Connor said.
He used a pick that had been left on the table to pry a few of the jewels loose from the coffin and place them in Alex's bag. He could see where a few had already been taken by others before them.
That was easy, Connor said.
As soon as he turned around to face his sister, he wished he hadn't just said that.
Connor?
Alex said, looking at her brother, who was completely petrified.
Through the dim flames of their lanterns, the twins saw a dozen humongous black wolves circling them. They were surrounded by the big bad wolf pack. The wolves growled at the twins and gritted their teeth.
Stay back,
Connor said, and swung the pick at them. This didn't affect them at all. A few of them snickered.
Are these them?
One wolf said.
Yes,
another wolf said.
We've been tracking their scent for days. Hello, children,
said Malamclaw, creeping toward them.
I would say, nice to meet you, but I can tell from your smell that we have crossed paths before.
Please don't hurt us,
Alex said. She was shaking with fear and clutching onto Connor.
Can we eat their limbs at least?
Another wolf said.
She doesn't need their limbs, does she?
She? Alex asked. Who is she?
We agreed we would bring them to her unharmed,
Malamclaw said regretfully, looking toward the twins.
You're coming with us.
Connor, Alex whispered to her brother. What are we going to do?
I've got an idea, Connor said.
He placed his lantern on the ground and took a step closer to Malamclaw.
Bad dog! Very bad dog! Sit!
The wolves and Alex all had the same expression on their faces.
What was he doing? I said sit! That's a very bad dog! Go to your basket!
Continued Connor, shaking his index finger at Malamclaw. Whatever he thought he was doing was failing miserably, and it was just insulting the wolves.
I changed my mind,
Malamclaw told Spack.
You can eat their limbs.
Well, I'm out of ideas, Connor said, looking back at his sister.
I'm not, Alex said.
In one quick move, Alex kicked the lantern Connor had placed on the ground, and it soared across the tunnel and crashed into one of the wolves, setting him partially ablaze. The wolves rushed to help extinguish their friend. Alex grabbed Connor's hand, and they ran farther down the tunnel, going deeper into the mines.
After them!
Malamclaw commanded, and the remaining members of the pack chased after them. The twins ran as fast as they could. They only had one lantern left, so they were practically in the dark. They could hear the wolves stampeding behind them. Their howls were unbearably loud as they echoed down the tunnel. The tunnel began to descend, making it nearly impossible for the twins to run.
Jump in there,
Connor said, pointing to a minecart on a track.
No way,
Alex said, but Connor picked her up and plopped her inside. He jumped inside himself and pulled the brake lever, and the cart began traveling down the tunnel at a rapid speed. A few of the wolves swiped at them with their claws. The twins ducked down as far as they could in the cart, but not before one of them reached Connor and left a bloody scratch on his forearm. Alex kicked another right in the snout, and it whimpered away. Another wolf barely missed the twins with his claws, but knocked the brake lever right off the cart. The cart gained speed, and soon they were outrunning the wolves.
We're doing it! We're getting away!
Said Connor, holding his hand over his wounded arm.
I wouldn't celebrate just yet if I were you,
Alex said. She pointed to a sign ahead that said,
Danger! Use brake lever while going down tunnel.
That's not good,
Connor yelled, wishing for the lever to somehow grow back on their cart. The cart began speeding faster down the tunnel as it descended at a steeper angle. They were going so fast, too fast. They could barely open their eyes with the air rushing by their faces. The track turned and dipped deeper into the mountain. The twins were afraid they were going to fly out of the cart if it didn't fly off the track first. It was the scariest roller coaster they had ever been on.
This would be awesome if it weren't for the fear of death,
Connor shouted. He was even tempted to put his hands up, but he knew it wasn't an appropriate time. The cart zoomed through the mines, showing no sign of slowing down. In a matter of seconds, the twins' greatest fear had gone from being eaten alive by wolves to crashing in a dwarf mine. The track led them through a giant cave, with stalactites pointing towards stalagmites and a large pool of water at the very bottom. To the twins' horror, they passed another sign, which said, Dead End. It appeared an avalanche of rocks had fallen on the track many years before, and now the twins were speeding toward the solid wall of rock that had formed there. The twins ducked as low as they could in the minecart, bracing themselves for the traumatic injuries they were about to receive. The cart slammed against the rocks. It violently rattled as it broke through the wall. A few rocks fell into the cart and onto the twins. Alex screamed, and Connor covered his head as much as possible with his arm. Just when they thought they were surely about to die, the cart slowly came to a stop. The twins peeked around from inside the cart. They were outside, somewhere in the dwarf forest, on the other side of the mountain.
"I cannot believe we just survived that," Connor said.
They were pretty banged up, but they climbed out of the cart, not seriously injured for the most part. They didn't waste a minute questioning their luck. The twins ran from the cart into the trees.
"We've got to get out of here," Alex said. "It won't be long before the wolves find us again."
"Who are they talking about? Who are they going to bring us to?"
Connor asked.
"I'm afraid to even say it."
"Ah!"
Alex screamed. They hadn't been in the forest for even a minute when they both felt brutal blows to the backs of their heads. They fell to the ground, slowly losing consciousness. Right before they passed out completely, the twins saw the faces of Bobblewort the Troll and Acorn the Goblin looking down at them, each holding a club in his hand. The twins woke up with splitting headaches. They were bound together with rope in the back of a very familiar cart.
"Hey, Acorn, look who's waking up,"
Bobblewort said.
"The little thieves have arisen,"
Acorn said. The Goblin and Troll were driving the same exact cart, but it was being pulled by a different donkey. The previous one had most likely been used to death. They kept Alex's bag between them as they traveled down the road. Alex and Connor fought against the ropes, but they were tied with triple knots around their hands and feet.
"Where are we?" Connor asked.
Alex strained her neck looking up out of the cart, but managed to recognize some familiar trees.
"We're back where they caught us the first time," Alex said. "We must have been knocked out for an entire day."
"Would you like us to make it 2 days?
Asked Acorn, raising his club.
"This can't be happening again," Connor said. "You can't enslave us again. We told the fairies about you."
"Oh, yes, we know," Bobblewort said.
"They came and gave us all very long lectures about it," Acorn said.
"And they shut off all our tunnels, thanks to you,"
Bobblewort said angrily.
"Now we have to take the long way into our territory."
"Then let us go," Connor said.
"Not this time,"
Acorn said.
"You stole our king's crown while in our kingdom. According to the Happily Ever After Assembly's rules, we have every right to bring you back into our kingdom and charge you for your crime."
"It's gonna be one heck of a trial,"
Bobblewort said.
"Every troll and goblin will be there."
"And we've already scheduled you for beatings after the trial is over. Everyone in the territory will get a turn,"
Acorn said, and he and the troll howled with laughter. Connor stayed calm about the matter. He raised his tight hands just over the side of the cart. The scratch on his arm was still healing, and he stretched it so a few drops of his blood fell from his wound and onto the ground as they traveled.
"What are you doing?" Alex asked him.
"I'm leaving a trail," Connor said.
She didn't know what to think of this, but she trusted him. Whatever he was doing, he had a plan. A few hours later, the twins had managed to shift themselves up into a seated position. The troll and goblin continued entertaining themselves by predicting the horrible things the twins would go through once they got back to the troll and goblin territory. Connor began seeing dark figures running between the trees in the distance, like he had seen in the cave.
"Get ready," Connor said. "They're here."
Alex mentally prepared herself for whatever was about to happen.
"That was faster than I expected," she said.
A small howl came from the trees. Acorn and Bobblewort pulled on their donkey's reins and ordered it to stop. The cart came to a halt.
"Did you hear that?"
Acorn asked.
"Yeah, I did,"
Bobblewort said. They both pulled out their clubs and hopped off the cart, circling it for a moment.
"Over there,"
Bobblewort said.
"I see something."
The troll and the goblin took off into the trees.
"Help me get to my bag,"
Alex said to her brother. They began inching toward the front of the cart. Alex got a hold of her school bag with her teeth and dragged it into the back with them. It landed right by her tight hands, and she managed to open it and pull out Cinderella's glass slipper, almost spraining her wrist in the process.
"What are you doing?" Connor asked her. "Something that is going to hurt my soul and make me hate myself for the rest of my life," Alex said.
She forcefully hit the slipper against the floor of the cart and broke it into 3 pieces. She used one of the shards to cut her and her brother loose.
"Whoa," Connor said. "Never in a million years did I think you'd do that. That was pretty gangster."
"We can glue it back together, right?"
Alex said, trying to frantically put the glass slipper back together like a puzzle.
"It'll still work for the wishing spell, won't it?"
Connor asked.
"The spell never said it had to be in one piece,"
Alex said. They put the pieces of the slipper into Alex's bag and jumped out of the cart. They ran into the forest in the opposite direction that the troll and goblin had gone. A few moments later, They heard spine-chilling screams and howls as the troll and goblin were attacked by the big bad wolf pack. The horrible sounds made the twins run faster. They knew it'd only be a matter of seconds before the wolves picked up on their scents and would be right behind them. They didn't even know where they were going. They just knew they had to get somewhere safe as fast as possible. Alex was eyeing the forest around them. There was a deep roar coming from close by. Could they be near the ocean?
We're farther south than I thought, Alex said. I think we may be back in the fairy kingdom.
Then let's find a fairy who can turn these wolves into chihuahuas, Connor said.
He turned back, and in the distance behind them, he could see several wolves running toward them at full speed. A moment later, the twins saw the wolves running slightly ahead of them to both their right and their left, gaining ground and preparing for the attack. The twins ran through a set of thick trees and then came to a sudden and jarring stop. They were standing on the edge of a very high cliff, overlooking the ocean.
How'd we get to the ocean so fast? Connor yelled.
Look, Alex said. It's Mermaid Bay. We're somewhere between the Fairy Kingdom and the Sleeping Kingdom.
Connor looked behind them. The wolves were only a few feet away from pouncing on them.
No, it looks like we're somewhere between death and dying, Connor said.
Alex, I'm really sorry about this.
Sorry about what?
Ah!
Alex screamed. Connor pushed his sister and himself off the cliff seconds before they would have been tackled by the wolves. They were falling so fast they couldn't breathe or hear each other's screams. All they could hear was the air rushing past them. The twins plummeted into the ocean. The wolves stayed on top of the cliff for a few minutes, waiting for them to surface in the water. But they saw nothing. The twins were gone. Chapter 17. Goldilocks. Wanted dead or alive. It was just before sundown, and soldiers from the Corner Kingdom were hot on Goldilocks' trail. She had been spotted on the outskirts of Baker's Village in the early afternoon and had been on the run ever since. A group of 20 men were right behind her on their horses, determined to take her into custody by any means necessary. Lucky for her, Goldilocks had the fastest horse in all the kingdoms.
Come on, Porridge, Goldilocks said to her horse. You can make it, girl. We're almost at the border.
They passed Rapunzel's tower and crossed into the dwarf forest. But the soldiers kept chasing her. In doing so, they were breaking laws that the Happily Ever After Assembly had enacted. But then again, Goldilocks had broken so many laws she had lost count, so she doubted the soldiers would experience any repercussions for it. Porridge had an advantage over the other horses, since she knew the dwarf forest by heart. She and Goldilocks gained a lot of ground from knowing what was behind every tree and which paths led where.
Split up and find her!
Goldilocks heard one of the soldiers order from behind her. Goldilocks could feel her horse getting tired. They had been running for hours, and she knew Porridge needed a break soon if they were going to stay on the run any longer. They came across an abandoned barn that was partially hidden by trees. Goldilocks had often used this place to hide from anyone hot on her trail.
Porridge, I'm going to hide in here and wait it out, Goldilocks told her loyal horse. Find someplace safe and rest. Meet me back here tomorrow at sunrise.
Porridge nodded and galloped away. Goldilocks withdrew her sword and approached the barn. The door was off its hinges. It looked like someone or something had forced its way in recently. The inside of the barn was a disaster. Sacks of hay were knocked over, stables were broken down into nothing but bits of broken wood, and there were bloodstains on the floor and walls. But thankfully, whatever had caused this damage wasn't here anymore. Goldilocks put away her sword. She wasn't intimidated by the barn in the slightest. She had seen much worse, had been through much worse, and had caused much worse in her days on the run. She took off her long coat and her sword and began unlacing her tall boots, getting ready to settle in for the night. Something colorful caught her eye while she was doing so. A bright blue fabric was sticking out from the bottom of a stack of hay. Goldilocks pulled it out from under the haystack and examined it. It was a beautiful bright blue gown with delicate stitching. It reminded Goldilocks of a dress she had owned when she was a girl. It had been so long since the last time she'd worn a dress. She discovered a mirror hanging on the barn wall. It was slightly tilted and had cracks in the bottom half, but she still could see her reflection perfectly. She didn't like what she saw. Goldilocks was young, but she'd aged so much since the last time she'd seen her reflection so clearly. She was a full-grown woman now. Goldilocks undressed and put on the blue dress. She let her hair down and ruffled it up a bit. She wiped off all the dirt on her face with a handkerchief and looked in the mirror again. She stared at herself, completely awestruck. She had forgotten how beautiful she could be. She only wished Jack could see her looking like this.
Such beauty, such a waste,
said a voice. In the blink of an eye, Goldilocks had retrieved her sword and extended it in front of her.
Who's there?
Goldilocks demanded, but she didn't see anyone else in the barn.
If only the world could see what I see now. Goldilocks, a woman feared throughout all the kingdoms, standing vulnerably in a dress, said the voice. Don't be a coward. Show yourself, Goldilocks said.
She turned back to the mirror, but didn't see her reflection. Another woman, with a pale face and a dark hooded cloak, was staring back at her.
Hello, Goldilocks, said the woman in the mirror.
You,
Goldilocks said. There was only one woman in the world who could possibly have the ability to communicate from mirror to mirror.
I know you. You're the queen everyone is looking for.
Yes, the evil queen said. We're both women on the run. What do you want with me?
Goldilocks said.
Why do you assume I need something from you?
The evil queen said.
I've appeared to you simply to pass along some information I've recently acquired.
Nice try, but I'm not some ditzy maiden you can con, said Goldilocks, getting closer to the mirror.
Try giving me a poisoned apple, and I'll shove it down your throat. No, of course not,
the evil queen said, in a mocking tone.
You're just poor little Goldilocks, a girl who was tricked into thinking she was going on a date with the boy she loved, and has been running from the law ever since.
Goldilocks stepped away from the mirror.
How do you know that?
She asked with intensity in her eyes.
I know more about you than anyone,
the evil queen said.
I know that when you were a young girl, you received a handwritten letter from a young boy you loved named Jack. He asked you to meet him at a house a little way out of town and gave you instructions on how to get there. You went to the house and waited for hours, but he never showed up.
How do you know all this? Goldilocks asked.
You became sleepy in that house, didn't you?
The evil queen continued.
So, you decided to go to sleep in one of the beds and hoped you'd wake to find him. But you didn't wake to him, did you? You woke to find three bears staring down at you, and they almost killed you. You barely escaped the house alive, but the bears pressed charges against you anyway for breaking into their home, and being young and scared, you ran and have been running ever since. For years you wondered how Jack could have done that to you. How could he have framed you like that? And then finally, one night you snuck into the Red Riding Hood Kingdom and asked him. But Jack told you he'd grown up poor and illiterate. He hadn't sent you the letter, because he never learned to write. Someone else did. Someone else framed you. Jack had been looking for you for years. He was devastated when you disappeared. He even climbed a beanstalk looking for you. You two have been meeting overtly in the shadows for almost a decade now.
Who told you that?
Goldilocks asked.
Every driven person comes from a mountain of pain they wish to keep hidden,
the evil queen said.
I did my research on you, Goldilocks, and you and I aren't so different. Except, I know who wrote you that letter.
Goldilocks shook her head in disbelief. How could she know something Goldilocks had been trying to discover her entire life?
And who might that be?
She asked.
Red Riding Hood, of course, the evil queen said.
What?
Goldilocks said. She almost stopped breathing.
It's true,
the evil queen said. The young queen has a large mirror in her bedroom and talks in her sleep. You'd be appalled by the things she confesses in her nightmares. Goldilocks had to sit down. She didn't even feel human anymore. She felt like an entity made of pure anger.
Red Riding Hood has always loved Jack, and you were standing in the way,
the evil queen said.
She was young when she wrote the letter. She had no idea what the consequences would be.
She thought you would leave broken-hearted before the bears got home, and then Jack would be hers.
But she's had years and years worth of opportunities to make things right,
Goldilocks said. Her eyes were staring down at the ground, but she was blind with rage. She stood up, threw off the blue gown, and redressed in her own clothes, sword and all.
What will you do now that you know the truth?
The evil queen asked.
I'm going to take Red on a trip, Goldilocks said, and she's not coming back. There's only one place where she can disappear forever,
the evil queen said, and her reflection faded from the mirror. Goldilocks burst out of the barn and ran into the night, whistling for her horse.
She was about to do exactly what the Evil Queen wanted. But more important, she was about to get her long-overdue revenge. Chapter 18. The Mermaid's Message. Connor was positive he was dead. The fall into the ocean must have killed him, because wherever he was, he had never been so relaxed. He felt like he was somewhere in the glorious state between being asleep and being awake, a place he knew very well. His eyes were closed, and he was lying down on the softest surface he had ever laid on in his entire life. The air was cool and refreshing. It smelled a little salty, but he was sure he was only imagining that, because the last thing he had seen was the ocean. He opened his eyes a tiny bit, and saw his sister lying next to him. She must have died too. But she seemed so peaceful that he didn't worry about her. He couldn't have worried about anything if he tried. He felt so wonderful that, wherever he was, all he could feel was enjoyment. He must be in heaven, he thought. Connor opened his eyes wider. His vision was a little blurry, but he could see so many colorful objects moving in all different directions above him. They looked human the more his eyes adjusted. They must be angels, he told himself, and went back to sleep. Just as he drifted off, a thought occurred to him. Do you sleep when you're dead? Do you feel and smell the air around you? He must have been alive, after all, to be experiencing all these things. But where was he? He opened his eyes as wide as possible, so they would adjust faster. He and his sister were lying in a large clamshell at the bottom of the ocean. They were in an underwater cave of sorts, but they were able to breathe in a large air bubble that surrounded them. There were coral pillars in the cave with dark, rocky walls behind them. A sandy floor was underneath them, and they were facing an endless blue ocean. Swimming around the top of the bubble was a gathering of mermaids. They were gorgeous and colorful. All of them were pale but had long hair that matched their tails in vibrant sea colors. There were blues and greens, purples and pinks. They were friendly and waved at Connor as soon as they noticed he was awake. Connor looked down at his wounded arm and saw a seaweed bandage covering a scratch. One of them must have wrapped it. Alex, Connor said. Alex, wake up! He tapped her on the shoulder, and she stirred to life. Hmm? Alex said, who's in an extremely relaxed state of her own. Mermaids, Connor said. There are mermaids swimming around us! This caught Alex's attention, and her eyes fluttered open. It took her a few moments to realize where she was and that it was actually happening. She sat straight up on the clam. Connor, why are we at the bottom of the ocean?
Beats me, he said. Check out this bubble around us.
He noticed that the longer they stayed in it, the smaller it became as they breathed in the air.
The last thing I remember is being chased by wolves, and then you... You jerk! She said, remembering being pushed off the cliff. She hit him repeatedly with open hands.
Hey, stop it! It was either that or be attacked by wolves. Pick your poison, Connor said.
If we survived the fall, how did we get down here?
We brought you here, said a mermaid swimming above them.
She had long, soft turquoise hair that matched the shimmering scales on her tail.
The seafoam spirit wants to speak to you.
The seafoam spirit? Connor asked.
She's on her way,
said another mermaid with pink hair and a pink tail.
I don't think these mermaids get out much, Connor whispered Alex.
Here she comes now, said a mermaid of purple coloring.
Sure enough, a cluster of seafoam drifted through the ocean toward Connor and Alex. It came into their bubble and swirled around before hovering in front of them. It slowly morphed into the shape of a mermaid.
Hello, children, said an airy voice from inside the seafoam.
Hello,
Alex said, tilting her head like a puppy looking at something peculiar.
Howdy, said Connor,
tensing every muscle on his forehead.
I hope you are well, the seafoam spirit said.
She was frothy, and her foam was constantly rejuvenating itself.
I instructed my mermaids to take very good care of you. You poor things nearly drowned when you fell into the ocean.
Alex gave her brother a really dirty look.
Did we? She said.
Are you the seafoam spirit?
Yes, the spirit said. But you and your brother may know me best as the Little Mermaid.
Alex's face lit up. This was one person she hadn't thought she'd meet in the land of stories.
You're the Little Mermaid? She asked, completely enthralled.
Good Lord, what happened to you? Connor asked.
I thought you died, Alex said.
Not exactly, the spirit said. When I was turned into a human by the Sea Witch all those years ago, I had to marry the prince in order for the spell to last. Unfortunately, as everyone knows, the prince married someone else, and my body...